Welcome today to our interview series, Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Dr. Yen Xu. Yen is a Senior Research Program Manager in External Research and Programs at Microsoft Research and an internationally renowned leader. Yen, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
My pleasure.
With a PhD in physics from McGill, how did you get into computing?
As you know, I was a physicist. I did all my physics degrees and research in physics. However, all those research were image processing based, so which means that I was actually spending most of my time creating software. For example, I did my PhD degree at McGill University at the physics department, and the project was on X-ray and neutron diffraction of metallic gases. Some of the physics experiments were done within a couple of weeks at Chalk River Atomic Energy Station. And then in the following month, I would be spending most of my time just creating software to process the data, to get some sense out of the data. At the time, my self-taught programming skills served my science research very well. And eventually, I become so addicted to software engineering. And I think that was the driving force for my career change. Many years ago, I think it's in 1995, after I finished my postdoc research on magnetic resonance imaging, a joint effort between physics and a hospital, I decided that I wanted to be a software engineer. So I joined the software industry, becoming a computer engineer.
How did you end up with your current position at Microsoft Research, running the Computational Education for Scientists initiative?
You know, for the first almost 10 years of my industry and career, I was creating commercial software, which was totally a different environment from academic research. So in those days, I almost forgot that I was once a physicist. But deep down in my mind, I was always looking for an opportunity that I can put together my science and engineering background together to create something new, something that only I can do it well. And that opportunity came to me about 2 years ago. You know, I found this very special group at Microsoft Research called External Research and Programs. And this group, people like myself are allowed to be creative and come up with programs that can not only realize our own potential, but help empower other people to realize their potential. And that is the initiative that I come up with, which I call Computational Education for Scientists.
So that's really interesting. So why is there a Computational Education for Scientists program at Microsoft Research?
Many people have asked me this question, from different angles and perspectives. I think we have all observed that the rapid advances in computing technologies have dramatically changed the way we practice research, especially in many science areas. For example, astronomy, which used to be mostly observational, it is now experimental because you can do computer modeling and the simulation. You can predict. And biology research is also going through similar changes. In other words, science is going through a computational transformation. And the only way to accelerate the transformation is to teach the young scientists the way that we do science today. And Microsoft has been collaborating with academia in all areas to empower scientific research with the latest computing technologies. And this Computational Education for Scientists program is designed to complement our research collaborations with the scientists and facilitate creating a generation of what we call computational scientists. And the goal is to make young scientists more successful in their own ways rather than in their own fields, rather than making a lot of people doing double major like they are doing today. So then go back to the question, we believe that real-world computational challenges inspire innovation. We want to learn from the researchers and educators what are really needed in today's research labs and the classrooms, so we can improve our products to better serve the community. We believe that it will, in turn, expand our market in the future, if not today.
What makes the computational program unique, and what value does it deliver?
There are many computer science education programs, as you may be aware of already, are offered to science students in many schools from various organizations at different levels. Some of them focus on K-12, some of them focus on, you know, entry-level computer science. What makes the computation education for a science program unique is that when we are inspired from the problems, by the problems and the computational challenges in sciences. So the program aims at bringing real-world scenarios into the classroom to inspire and stimulate teaching and learning. So in the process of doing that, we hope to extract the fundamental computer science concepts and skills from domain-specific requirements to form a common core of computational education. So that's the grand vision. We want to identify a common core that is required for, you know, different disciplines. And we envision that the core to be modulated educational materials, like lab menus, even the real-world scenarios or examples that educators can use to ensemble into a curriculum that fits the computational education needs to his own or her own students.
You know, I feel that what will bring this sort of program to life is if you can share some stories about its success. Do you have some?
Oh, yes. So we started this program with some what we call early adopters. You know, these are the projects we collaborate with universities, you know, for proof of concept. And, for example, there was a class we put together at the Biomedical Engineering Department of Georgia Tech. The course is called Problem-Based Learning of Medical Imaging Processing. This is a graduate-level course with students from computer science as well as biomedical. The professor who teaches the course collaborates with doctors in the hospital to introduce the actual problems that's ongoing from their work and the requirements that the doctors wish to solve for the image processing. And so these problems are brought into the class project. And the results of this of such a class was very rewarding. You know, students were giving all these real scenarios. After they were taught some basic skills, they put together this project. And there were seven, so the class was 21 students. We put them in seven groups. And two of the class projects end up being published by a top IEEE conference. So that's very rewarding, very encouraging out of one semester's effort. So if anyone is interested, I can point them to the website. And then there's another example that is also very exciting. This is the project we call Hardware Laboratory for Healthcare at the UCLA. For this effort, two classes were created to complement the research effort on the campus as part of the healthcare research. And the research itself focuses on mobile network-enabled personal healthcare device. And we're going through some, you know, IP, intellectual property process, so I can't give you too much of the detail. But let's just say that the research requires interdisciplinary knowledge in healthcare, in physics, and electronic circuit design, and, of course, computer science in modeling, simulation, and mobile device and sensor network. So undergraduate students learn from the real setup for the research. They actually, you know, given the opportunity to have themselves exposed in the real research environment. And some students, you know, after taking classes, end up becoming graduate students, you know, joining the lab, joining the research. So that's really what this education effort is about. We want to encourage students becoming interdisciplinary and get into the research area. With the knowledge that, you know, make them thinking out of the boxes. So the class also promotes the communication and the social aspects in interdisciplinary research, which students don't usually get trained in traditional classes. Now, another example that is also very exciting and it's going so well is what we call .NET for Physics. And we started this one at the UC Berkeley. The Advanced Physics 111 lab in the department is built in the 50s. I think that's very typical in most of the physics departments. The students, you know, have to spend time in spend a lot of time actually in the past to collect data manually and process them manually. For example, for experiments like X-ray diffraction, not only they have to manually collect the data, they have to spend time in the dark room, you know, for the film processing, which is really, you know, not matching up with today's digital, you know, time. So a year ago, when the lab was ready for a facelift, technology facelift, we called it, we put together this project to modernize the lab using the .NET technology from Microsoft. It has, if you go to their website, there's a wiki built by the lab. It tells you that this project has dramatically changed the teaching and learning experience. Students learn basic computer science concept while they do physics experiments.
Well, yeah, and that sounds really exciting. And in fact, what I'll do is I'll publish some of the website links when I publish out the interview itself, so that our audience can have an opportunity to have a look. So what is the current status of the computational program?
As I was mentioning, I started this program like with five proof of concept projects, my five early adopters, and I just introduced you three of them. The program was officially announced last year in September at the workshop, at the fifth workshop. And I can also give you the link to that website. There's a lot of information and the presentations and the conclusions reached from that workshop all available on that website. The workshop was a all-hands-on discussion. So it's, and we focused on three topics regarding computational education for scientists. Number one, what to teach. Number two, how to teach. And number three, how to assess. Now, so currently, we are expanding our proof of concept portfolio by extending the collaboration into more computing areas and more disciplines. So meanwhile, there is a MIRFP, request for proposal, just released on what to teach, because as you can imagine, this is a tough topic, and just to decide what exactly we want to teach students about computational, especially to a group of students that comes with diversified background in computing. So this MIRFP, what to teach, was announced just last month, and the purpose is that we can collect more thoughts on this topic. And you know, this program actually is all about collecting wisdom from the community, and then consolidate our understandings and findings and serve back to the community. So the goal of these activities is really to experiment and consolidate initial findings to form a recommendation for our future activities. And so that there's a couple of things that's coming by the end of this year, and which will also be announced in our website.
You know, what more should we be doing and teaching, and what new computer science curricula are needed?
I think the essence is to avoid creating young dinosaurs. I got this word from professors at the University of Maryland in our recent conversation. I think it describes by itself that what we mean, right? We don't want to teach students with almost obsolete systems from industry, from real world. We want them, you know, we want to keep them up to date. We want them to learn what's most exciting and the most updated in the technology area. So, and the way to do that is to make the teaching and learning directly relevant to the current computational problems in sciences and the latest computing technologies. One way to make that happen, I think, is to integrate existing computer science curriculum with scenarios from real-world problems. For example, the challenges in advancing the performance of medical magnetic resonance imaging can be introduced in high-performance computing or parallel programming courses in computer science. And there is a wonderful class that's taught by Professor Wenmei Wu and David Kirk at the University of Illinois, and sets a very good example. In that class, the course is put together by faculties from several different disciplines, including from astronomy and chemistry and biology and physics. One of the most, you know, exciting example that to me is that they talk about how if we could design magnetic resonance imaging differently so that we can engage in advance the performance of medical imaging processing. However, the only problem in that new design would be the data processing. Unless we introduce parallel programming, we cannot solve that problem. So examples like that really stimulate students' thinking. And that's what we believe that the direction should be in terms of creating new curriculum. Perhaps we can, you know, keep all the traditional computer science curriculum as those credits, but we can, you know, put them in perspective, put them in new context. That way, we can teach computer science in for a purpose, and that solves real problems in sciences.
You know, with culture changes, what new pedagogies are needed?
One of the initial findings we have concluded from the workshop that we did last year is that the curriculum design really should be resulted from faculties of multidiscipline. Like what I just described, what's going on at UIUC is a great example. If you wanted to, you know, use some, say, database issues in healthcare, you perhaps not, you know, the class should not be created just by the computer scientists. And it should really, as a joint effort, combine the input from healthcare people as well as and the perspective of computer science. And then also introduce the problems into the classroom. And so that's what we call today problem-based learning pedagogy, meaning that and rather than, you know, diving into the theory straight, you wanted to start the teaching and learning experience by describe what's going on, how the technology can help, what exactly is needed, and how the challenges in computer in computing maps to classic computer science logic. So that example is what we've been using at the class in Georgia Tech. Another culture change for the class is that we really should expose students to the real research environment. And this is actually quite easy to do because you can associate what the computer science basic learning with certain research directions and then bring the students into the lab just once or bring the researchers from the lab to guest lecture once, even once, for the class. It will change the whole dynamics of the class, of the teaching. So the class at UCLA that I described earlier is one of the examples. We, you know, students get to see how the mobile devices and sensor networks are used to save people's life. You know, once those ideas and the networks are being integrated into the healthcare system. You may find many papers in our initial report. We call it Transform Science, and this report is available from our website, and many people share their initial findings and experience from that perspective.
You know, I find this really fascinating, Yan, in that I think that this will help to address, you know, there's just all this items in the news about declining enrollments and so forth,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like this program will really build passion and excitement and reach out to the greater community to get engaged in this kind of research or this kind of education. So I think it's a very positive step forward.
Yes. Oh, actually, since you mentioned the decreasing enrollment in computer science, I want to talk about that a little bit. I want to make sure that we're sending the right message. Sometimes I think people thought that this program is about stealing students from science into computer science. You know, so, but that's not the message. The message I'm trying to send through this computational education for scientists is that we want to use computer science training to empower students in all disciplines to make them be more successful in their own field. If some students, like myself, you know, initially started with physics and eventually get into, you know, a computer science area, that's fine, that's great. So it's all about how to engage the technologies with all the discipline researchers.
Yeah, it sounds like empowerment, engagement, and passion. And I like those messages. So, you know, what do you hope to accomplish in the next 5 years?
You know, this computational education for scientists program, it's about, like I mentioned, it's about collecting wisdom from the community. And then we want to serve the community back with what we have reached together as a group. So everything we do under this program is like a group exercise. We, you know, collect thoughts, and then we debate, we discuss, and then try to make some sense out of it, and then try to identify what is the core, what is the agreement, and then we put it back as a guideline to help people move forward. So I hope at the end of the fifth year, with the input from both computing and scientific research communities, we can form a recommendation for curriculum development in terms of computational education for scientists. And I also hope that that recommendation will actually have concrete examples and what I call modules of curriculum materials that will include the contributions from all schools who is willing to share, and, you know, with the whole syllabi or one curriculum, one class material, or even just the scientific scenarios that are associated with certain fundamental computer science concepts. So we hope to, you know, form that recommendation and help people move forward from there, and mostly help people to know that there are these things available from others, so you don't want to reinvent the wheel. You know, see what others are doing and borrow them and re-ensemble to fit your needs.
Could you tell us a little bit more about how exactly Microsoft Research collaborates with academia and research and education?
Yes, of course. Microsoft Research, it's, we call it a safe house, meaning that we are pretty much independent from the rest of the company in the sense that we can do research just like in other institutions. And not only that, there is a very special group, like I mentioned, in Microsoft Research called External Research. And people in this group, their research projects are based on collaborations with the universities. And usually we start the collaboration by what we call proof of concept or early adopter projects. And these are non-competitive fundings. We build collaborations with researchers and who plays a leading role or who dare to, you know, to be innovative, try something that not afraid of failures. And so we, through non-competitive early adopter projects, we can decide either this is the right direction to go or perhaps premature or perhaps wrong direction at all. And so we decide from there whether or not we want to move on. And then once we decide to move on, the second step would be the typical request for proposal stage, which opens worldwide. For example, my current status, like I mentioned, the Computational Education for Scientists program, we have done early adopters. We have gained enough confidence that we know this is a good thing to do, and this is this program is going to do good to the community and good to the Microsoft. So then soon we're going to move into this request for proposal stage, which opens to everyone in the academia. And then the funding usually for each winner of RFP involves typically 50 to 75K. And then RFP may go for one or several rounds, depends on the area and how the research will go. And at that point, at the end of one or two rounds of RFP, once we get confident about it, we again move into a non-competitive funding process for collaboration, and this time it's what we call direct funding. And it's with people who are playing not only leading role in the research area, who are also trying to bring education together into the picture, because we believe that any research that's good and it needs to have young students, young generation of scientists generated to keep it going on. So any research area that we have confidence, we wish and we want to associate it with certain education efforts. So direct funding is for that. And then sometimes, depending on the area, the ultimate status stage of the collaboration may end up with productization, and or becoming integrated into our open source community. And so I envision the computational education for scientists program will be end up in the second, meaning that we want to eventually build a curriculum repository, and that's widely shared with the academia. And so put what I just described into the computational education for science perspective, then after the early adopters, I'll be moving into the request of proposal stage. I plan to do it twice, then two cycles. That'll be, you know, probably 2 years. And then we go from there, and depends on how the result is. And hopefully, you know, we end up with some open community. So that's the general model of our collaboration. And after that, we can kind of walk away, meaning that we feel like we have found a permanent host, either an open community or a productization unit, and then we walk away, start again some other new program. And this model is actually described on our website, and with a pyramid kind of picture. So I'll send you the link, and then I think people can get a better understanding with that picture.
You know, it sounds like the collaboration programs at Microsoft Research is about working with faculty. Is there any programs that allow you to work directly with students?
Oh, yes, of course. We the research goes usually between our researchers and the faculties, but a lot of work is actually done by involving PhD students and also master students. And in some cases, we even have high school students involved in the picture. And there are many different ways we involve students into the picture. And internship is one of the biggest programs that we have at Microsoft Research. Every year, we bring in 250 or more students from worldwide, and from all kinds of disciplines to join us on our main campus. This is only on our main campus, Microsoft Research, and all the other product divisions also hire interns. So I myself, for example, last year I had 3 interns working with me on a compiler project, and this year we plan to, I myself plan to bring in 5 interns. 3 will continue on working the compiler project, and then 2 will be working with me on the computational education for scientists program. And you know, it's a great way for us to engage with students. The only problem is the parking issue. Every summer we run into this parking lot overloaded kind of issue. So we actually have a special package for intern students, and to allow them to buy a bicycle, and you know, encourage them to ride bike rather than driving. So that's the situation in the summer when all the interns come.
Hey, you're working into the green revolution, right?
Yeah. Yes, that too. Yes.
You know, Yen, it's interesting. I'm really compelled by, you know, these different kinds of stories you're telling me. So, you know, perhaps we can do a podcast with one of the interns and perhaps with some of the success stories in this program. I think it'll provide sort of a look and feel to how it's shaping out in the future.
Definitely, yes. There's since I graduated from McGill, so I'm trying to establish connections with McGill University. And like I was telling you, there's great things going on this campus just today. And the tech party, I think they will, you know, put it on the website. I'll send you the link so you know, get a look and feel, kind of feeling how exactly the computational education for scientists program is applied to the change, the culture change on the campus of McGill University. And I do plan to bring some students from this campus as my intern. And so, yes, I think that's a great idea.
You know, it's interesting that it's coming full circle. You know, you're originally at McGill and you went out into industry, and now you're working with Microsoft Research, and then going back to McGill to provide added insight and to be collaborative and, you know, provide sort of empowerment and engagement and passion for what's happening there. So I like that aspect of coming full circle.
Yes, I like that. I think, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with this statement that Microsoft makes, your potential, our passion. I mean, it sounds like a commercial marketing kind of thing, but I myself, I feel so, my interpretation that, you know, this technology and the position I am in really helping me to realize my potential, and I want to bring that to other people. So McGill definitely is on my list because it just feels so dear to my heart, and I know very well how the research is going on here in science as well as in computer science. There is a great potential here, and then you know, I want to work with scientists here and to get the best out of it.
Okay, yeah, and I'm going to throw you through a loop here. I'm going to ask you a personal question.
Sure.
Okay, you know, what's your favorite gadget?
I'm not a gadget kind of person, and I don't play games that much, but I love my cell phone.
Well, that's interesting. So do you have one of those kind of touch screen type with Windows Mobile, or?
I have Trio, the latest Trio, Palm Trio. And what I do is, this is my mini computer. I check my email, on you know, my Hotmail, my Microsoft email. I check my schedule. It's very easy to sync with my laptop and my desktop. And it also is my data storage backup. And I carry that with me. Like right now, when I'm traveling, I usually leave my computer in the hotel, just carry a Trio with me. It just encapsulates everything together into that little thing, and I can type on that one as well. So it also gives me excuse sometimes I cannot type too much. When I write email, I just say, oh, I'll get back to you, since I'm you know, answering from my phone.
I guess the other thing, too, is that you're very busy, you're on the road, and, of course, you head up this program. What do you do for recreation?
I do, well, in what we just do, let's see. In this Christmas, we have, like, four families together went ski for, like, a whole week. That's our favorite sport. And for other recreation, we go, I mean, I have two young kids, so you can't really do much of your own. So rather than, you know, usually we go together and do kids stuff. We love to watch movie together. We ski together. Actually, the whole family plays tennis.
Well, there you go.
That's what we do.
Okay. It's that work-life balance, right? So.
Yeah, actually, you know, one thing about Microsoft Research is that at least for my position, I work on a very flexible schedule. I mean, when I travel, of course, it's not that flexible. But if I'm not traveling, I can work from home. So I can pick up my kids anytime I need to. And since the technology is so much, made everything so convenient, you don't feel like you're working from home. So, yeah, I really appreciate what we have today. The wireless, the mobile devices, the tablet. I actually have one of the most advanced tablet PC that has touch screen, that has very sensitive writing recognition. So, yeah, I like that too as well. Yeah, I forgot to mention that.
Well, yeah, and I really enjoyed this, and I thank you for taking the time to share your valued accumulated wisdom and deep insights with the audience. And we will definitely continue to follow your innovative work and global leadership with keen interest. And as I mentioned, we'll do some follow-up interviews with your interns and some of the success stories, you know, at the universities and the projects they're working on. I think it'll make for an interesting kind of follow-ups.
Yes, I think so, too. I look forward.
Okay, well, thank you again, and take care.
Thank you. My pleasure.